It's the Email Deliverability Podcast. Luke Avedon and email expert Ed Forto, Mr. Deliverability.
Ed, that was amazing.
That's so professional. I love it.
I just want to listen to it again.
I may make that my ringtone.
Yes, you should. I will do the same thing. So we are here today to talk about the Gmail updates, February 2024. Is it a complete nothing burger or is it an email apocalypse? I'm not sending 5,000 emails a day. So I read the announcement and I was like, this doesn't affect me. But what do you think, Mr. Deliverability?
It affects everyone. It is not, it's not a cold email problem. It is an email problem. And it's something that everybody should be paying attention to. I don't think it's the email apocalypse.
Okay.
But it's certainly a problem that people need to pay attention to.
Okay. So whether you have a newsletter or whether you're doing cold email, this new update affects you. If you have a Gmail account that you're using, or if you're sending to people with Gmail, correct?
That's correct. Gmail is being quite vague in their documentation, okay, leaving it up to interpretation. So there's going to be a lot of different people that come up with different ideas on how it will affect people. But okay, based on that and other things that they're doing, it's fairly clear to me that it will affect everyone.
Okay. So not just super spammers sending over 5,000 emails per day. So one,
correct,
one issue, which I think a lot of people are missing, is this is everything they're talking about is a limit applied to workspaces, not just domain. So I could see if you have one domain for your business, you have different domains you're using for your sales team, and you're thinking, okay, well, each of those domains, they can still send 5,000 emails a day. But when you realize it's in your entire workspace, so am I understanding correctly, if I'm a big company with 1,000 employees, if I have used Gmail as my provider for corporate email, that counts as one single workspace. So these limits apply for the entire company, correct?
That part doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay.
It can't be 5,000 per workspace. The reasons that you just mentioned, if you have a large company and they're trying to get in the big corporate companies like Outlook has a stronghold there, they're going to be sending out more than 5,000 emails in any large company.
Right.
So it's got to be per email account. And they're more concerned about spam. And the only people that are using their accounts that spam would be an issue is the people who are using those accounts for email outreach.
Right. So you were saying something about agencies, though, who are doing email outreach. They don't actually set up a new workspace for each client. That's very rare. They will set up a bunch of new subdomains and alternative domains for each client, but they don't want the client to see accounts getting in trouble or having any kind of issue with Google. They want to kind of obfuscate that or take care of that themselves. Am I understanding this correctly?
You are explaining it and understanding it perfectly. Yes.
Okay.
They typically will open up, buy the domains. They will set up the email accounts in their own workspace. They may have 10 domains for a client sending out, if they're setting it up the way that we suggest, they may have anywhere from 2 to 5 subdomains for each domain, and they're sending emails from every one of those subdomains. So if you've got, say, 10 clients sending out 10 email accounts, you've got now 100 for those 10 clients. That means if you had to, you could only send like 500 emails total, I'm doing the math right. That makes no sense. They're not, sending out a lot more than that.
Right,
so,
and consider follow-ups. If you have a simple
single email. Yeah, if you've got an email sequence of 4 emails, then you're sending as many as 200 emails at a time per day. So you're well over that limit at that point.
Right.
Wow. So it doesn't make any sense that it's per workspace. It has to be per probably domain. Everything is on a domain level, not an account level.
Okay. I mean, do you think that agencies doing cold outreach are just going to completely abandon Gmail and use their own private SMTP or switch to Outlook?
Well, there's going to be a couple of things that are going to happen. So if they do believe that it is a 5,000 limit per workspace, they're going to start, these refugees are now going to start migrating to other sources. So the next best place is Outlook, because their center IPs are solid. Now, Outlook is not going to welcome these cold email refugees with open arms. They don't want their platform being used to spam the world. So they're going to put a stop to that very quickly. Now you have SMTP for providers. They don't want, they may accept them as clients, but now you're dealing with most likely lower quality sender IPs. Because if you're, it doesn't make any sense to have a dedicated sender IP if you're sending cold email, because you're going to have a fairly high spam complaint rate. And you need this, you need the cover of a shared sender IP and people using it for transactional emails and subscription emails, where you're getting a very, very low spam complaint rate. And that gets that gets averaged in with the high spam complaint rate from the cold email marketers.
So if I'm understanding correctly, my idea that it's a secret weapon to have, if I'm a outreach agency and I buy my own sender domain, sender IP just for myself, and I'm using my own SMTP server, I can keep that pure. But there's actually two problems. One, this is not as well known as being sent from Gmail or Outlook. Everyone's inbox is expecting email from Outlook and Gmail. This sender IP does not have much of a reputation. So it's actually probably rated as significantly lower quality out of the box than Outlook or Gmail. One, and then two, which I had not considered, was the shared benefit of most people are not getting spam complaints at all on their email. So all your, most of your neighbors on Gmail are good neighbors, and they're not going to pull down your reputation. They're actually going to increase your reputation. It's like doing something shady in a really good neighborhood. As opposed to,
And there's an assumption here that if you're buying a dedicated sender IP, that's a quality sender IP. They're usually used. So that it's available for sale for a reason. Somebody gave it up. They didn't give it up more often than not because, I'm inboxing at 100% with the sender IP. If somebody has a sender IP that it's inboxing at 100%, they're not giving it up. But you go in and you buy a dedicated sender IP, it probably has a low reputation. You don't find that out until you start mailing. You have to take the time to build that reputation up. And that'll never happen if you're using it for cold email.
Wow. Okay. And let's get into the spam complaint rates. This was the most shocking thing in their announcement. So I believe it's 1 in 1,000 spam complaint. They said it was
ideal. The documentation showed 3 in 1,000.
3 in 1,000 is recommended, and 1 in 1,000.
This is the numbers. 1 in 1,000 come from our conversations with different ESPs and the either director of or the manager of email deliverability, and so they're looking at the numbers based on the mailbox reactions to things. So they're looking at the spam complaint rates. They're looking at bounce rates. They're looking at unsubscribe rates. And based on those numbers, they have a metric on what's a safe number for one of their customers to have. And if they're over that threshold, then they'll move them to lower quality sender IPs so they can protect the rest of their customers.
So, I mean, that is a very sensitive complaint rate. Because if we're talking 1 in 300 messages, no one can mark it as spam. I mean, I mark friends and family.
1 in 1,000.
1 in 1,000. But this new, in the documentation for the Gmail update, we're saying they're increasing it, perhaps, to not even 1 in 333, correct?
No, what they're saying 3%? It's 3 in 1,000.
Okay,
but
So
if you're using it for cold email, and if you're using it even for opt-in email, and let's say I'm having a bad day, I subscribe. The second somebody subscribes to your email, they've already forgotten that they've subscribed to it.
Right.
What is this in my inbox? I don't remember this person. They're more likely now than ever to just mark it as spam. I see it all the time because I probably have over 100 accounts connected to just one of my Google Postmaster Tools accounts. And I'll see not like 0.3 or 0.5% spam rates. I'll see spam rates in the 3, 4, 5, 6% range.
Oh my gosh. That is terrifying. Because I think I mark friends and family email as spam more than 3 in 1,000. Like my high school emails me all the time asking for money, and they don't even have an unsubscribe link. I always mark that as spam. So that's pretty shocking. Now, people are going to say we can prevent this by using warm-up tools. And there's a couple of concerns. I really don't know how long that is going to last, because one thing I noticed these warm-up providers don't mention is their API is registered with Google. It's not so much that these email boxes are all blind and they're sending back and forth. To make it more convenient for the customer, all the ones I've used recently, they hook up directly to your Gmail box, and you authorize Gmail to hook up with this warming service. So Gmail completely sees what API they're hooking up to. It's tracking the reputation of, you know, anyone who uses their API, even if they're go through that fancy pants registered, you know, Gmail partner or whatever, where your API is verified by Gmail. But even if you just don't go through that process, they're just tracking your reputation. So the fact that it's going into your Gmail and sending AI-generated emails, and usually not AI-generated, just something very templatey, and then they're immediately getting a response back from all these random email addresses. How long could that possibly last with Gmail, especially since these apps are literally hooking into the Gmail API? So that was a bit of a rant, but my question is, people are going to think, okay, well,
there's a question in there.
Yeah, the question is, oh, I just have to send 40 warm-up emails for every outreach email I send. Or to mitigate the spam complaint rate, all I have to do is use an auto warmer more often. What do you think about that?
Yeah, in theory, yes, you could do that. One of the things you can get around with the warming app IP, or if you're using a cold email app, is using a custom domain. So now it's not looking at the app's domain, is looking at your custom domain, but that is usually something new. It's a brand new domain, and they're seeing all this activity. In theory, if I'm sending 100 warm emails and I'm sending, say, 50 cold emails, then if you average the two, my spam complaint rate percentage lowers.
Right.
But as you said, Gmail, if they're serious about the spam problem, and it sure looks like they are, they know if you're using a warming service. So the warming service is not going to provide cover for you. The solution is you're sending emails that are relevant that people want to receive. You're not sending cold emails trying to qualify people. Are you interested in this thing? Like, no, I have no interest in it. Why'd you bother me? Or instead, you identify someone that definitely has a problem, and you're coming to them with a possible solution that they, thank God, they see your email. Like, thank God, yeah, I'm going through this thing. I'd like to talk to somebody about it. That takes some level of research. And if we're not willing to do that, and we're just like trying to send as many emails out to as many people as possible, you're going to run into a problem. Same thing with opt-in emails. Same thing. It's hardly any difference between the two.
You need to earn the right to reach out to someone.
Absolutely.
And make sure people don't complain too much. Because even a 10% spam rate, that's not, if you're reaching out to new people, even if it's part of all, you know, you're also calling and sending LinkedIn messages, getting 1 in 10 people to mark you as spam is not that hard. That's pretty common.
It's right. quite easy to hit that number.
And then teams who are doing that, I mean, they say they're using an auto warmer, but if you look at how much people are actually using an auto warmer, like, they probably don't send more than 40 messages per day in the auto warmer. That's at least what I've heard. It's not very common.
Yeah.
The people are really using it to its maximum extent. And then that's going to send towards your sending limit per workspace. So, you know, you think 5,000 emails is a lot to send out, but no, if you think it's a 4-step campaign, so divide that by 4, basically, because you're always sending these follow-up emails in your sequence.
Yep.
Then you're using your auto warmer. That's the biggest chunk out of it. So, you know, like, it's very easy for, even when not counting the follow-ups, the 4,000 out of your 5,000 email limit is just going to auto warmer to try to keep your spam complete rate artificially low.
Right.
So it's an issue. The two definitely go together, the sending limit and the spam complaint rate.
Yes. And one of the things that I see all the time is that people will set up multiple email accounts on a domain. So they'll say, I want to limit some number of emails sent to 50 emails per account, but I have 5 emails on a domain. Well,
right.
Everything's based on a domain level, not an email account level. So it's, you're not really doing any good by sending 50 emails on 50 different email accounts using the exact same domain. You should break it up into subdomains. So subdomain 1 sends 50 emails. That's its own separate domain. Subdomain 2 sends 50 emails. Subdomain 3 sends 50 emails. And now you have only 50 emails going out. But the other problem is it's looking at the percentage of emails that are spam complaints. So just because you're not sending out 55,000 emails, if you've got a spam complaint rate of 1%, even though you're only sending 50 emails, that's a red flag. That's a problem. And your account will get suspended, even with that low volume.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Wow. So interesting. It's kind of shocking in a way to me, keeping things so domain level that they're not. I mean, I think the language of talking about everything being per workspace in the announcement kind of shows that, okay, I will buy a bunch of Gmail boxes, but, you know, they're all being billed to the same credit card or something, and I am buying a domain, and then I'm splitting up each email address into its own subdomain and thinking you're so clever for doing that. If you're doing that through Gmail, through one account, I mean, you have completely different person buying the accounts, and it's done through different proxies to access and all this stuff. I don't think people are usually getting that sophisticated. They just think, okay, if I have multiple Gmail accounts and I have multiple domains and subdomains, I'm being so smart and so clever. But those days have got to be numbered.
They are. And one of the things you can do, we do have clients that do this, if they have multiple Google Workspace accounts. So that makes sense. But you have to open them up on probably a different name, because Google's going to see if Ed Forteau has 5 different workspace accounts, they're going to ask me to consolidate those workspace accounts at some point.
Right. Right. Yeah. Instead of having all these alternative secret identities to try to trick them. There was some technical stuff in there to narrow that on, but it actually seemed pretty obvious. They said, so they're going to just enforce technical setup rules more, like use DMARC, DKIM, SPF. But no one, especially in cold email, is going to launch a campaign these days without having those set up. Do you still see people not having that set up?
No, that's the number one thing to do, is set up DKIM and SPF. Most people, not everyone, a lot of people do have DMARC set up. One of the things in the documentation that didn't make any sense is the option to have it set to none versus quarantine or reject. Why have it in place at all unless you have it the policy to reject or quarantine? It offers them no level of protection. It's your account can easily be spoofed because the emails are getting through. So sadly, these, a lot of the platforms will set forth different rules, but they're very vague. They leave themselves plenty of wiggle room for interpretation. And that's one of those, is that it doesn't make any sense at all to not have a forced DMARC policy. Just if they're interested in protecting their users, then the people sending them emails need to have a forced policy, and that policy either needs to be quarantine or reject.
Right. I was surprised by that as well. I mean, it seems like they were going to go all the way to quarantine is required, but someone was like, well, maybe that's a little bit too harsh or will anger some customers. So they just made it none. And then they're just checking that someone made some effort to set up DMARC at all.
Well, then that's no different than the policy they've already had for the past handful of years.
Right. Right.
It's no policy on DMARC if it's set to none.
Right. Right. So, and then there was something about don't impersonate Gmail from headers. But, you know, I guess that's pretty obvious because people are pretending that they're sending from Gmail.
That's where the DMARC would come into play, so that it eliminates the spoofing and phishing attacks.
So I don't really understand how switching out the headers can possibly work, because isn't Gmail sending IPs so well known? So if I'm pretending to be Gmail by spoofing the headers, I'm not coming from an IP that's known already as a Gmail IP. So it seems like a really silly attack.
That part didn't make much sense at all, quite frankly.
Okay. Now, what is your view on this whole unsubscribe link in the email header? So some platforms, like I know Quickmail, can do this for cold outreach. You can not just put, you know, an unsubscribe link we're all familiar with, especially newsletters, in your signature, but Gmail will accept unsubscribe in the header. Then it will read that header and the user sees a normal email. But if you notice in Gmail, sometimes it will give you like pop-ups, like, do you want to unsubscribe from this? It makes subscriptions in theory easier to manage in the app. What is your view on that? Do you recommend people do that?
Absolutely. If you want to reduce your spam complaint rates and not have constant account suspensions, then you should put clearly a way for people to unsubscribe. I'll see that in Gmail. I see it in even Earthlink, where you see the unsubscribe button right at the top. It's very easy to find. You would rather have someone unsubscribe than click spam.
Right.
So make it easy for them. Don't make them mad. And I don't know what this is. I don't know who this is from. I'll just mark it as spam, as opposed to just unsubscribe, don't send me any emails anymore, or even asking them to reply and say, please stop or please unsubscribe me.
Okay.
You don't want to have people go through that much trouble.
But if I email you one-to-one personally, and if I'm doing low quantity outreach to people, do I need to put that in the header? Doesn't that kind of a red flag, because that's not a one-to-one email anymore? Because normal people don't do that, or maybe they should.
It certainly looks odd. I think over time people will get used to it.
Okay.
You're right. But there are people that are in conversations with people that have gotten an email. They've forgotten that they were in a conversation, or they forgot that they were talking about this one thing, and they're like, what is this? This is spam. It happens all the time. We have clients that are in conversations with people. They say, well, this email went into spam. And when we go back and we look at the history of things, we've come to the conclusion that at some point in the conversation, they didn't recognize the email. They forgot what was going on. It's happened to me. I've gotten emails from people all the time. And what is this? Right. I look at my bill, who's this from? Who is this guy? And I forget that, wait a second, I've been buying stuff for them almost every month, but it doesn't register. I mark it as spam once. Now I'm registered to spam as all the time. And I can't get that email, because I marked your email once as spam, all your emails after that go into spam. And so when clients will come to us and they'll say, well, the emails are going into spam in this one user, I go, it's because they marked it as spam at some point.
Right. Right.
And it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've noticed.
In a conversation.
Yeah, I've noticed, especially in the past few months, as a programmer, because I get a lot of outreach from recruiters. And even if I accept, you know, I like to see what companies are looking for and what's going on in the market. So I've noticed literally every single recruiting company, all their emails go to spam, no matter what the company is. So if I'm talking to someone on LinkedIn and they send me just a calendar invite, you know, to accept an interview or whatever, it always goes to spam. Any email communication, I have to go into my spam folder and take it out. So I think it didn't really used to be like that. Even a couple years ago, you know, recruiters had some deliverability problems and, you know, they're doing difficult outreach and stuff. But now it's like there's none. It's impossible to communicate with them on email. So it's a little
It's the same disturbing. With the financial people, too.
Okay.
Investment people, you'll find the bulk of their emails, especially in Outlook, will go straight to spam.
Wow.
And it doesn't matter whether they're sending from another Outlook account.
I mean, it's shocking, too. You think so many companies are like, well, let's try some outreach. Let's hire one or two salespeople and just give them the same email box that everyone else in the company gets. They don't know any of this stuff. They start reaching out. And now, especially like within the first week, they're doomed. Like the whole company email box is going to go to spam forever.
Kills everything. Right, right. That's why we tell everybody that you need to separate your email accounts into three different categories. You have your one-to-one emails, and you only send one-to-one emails. Those are the emails that you're closing deals with. You have your subscription or opt-in emails.
Right.
That's a different account because it's somewhere in between cold email and one-to-one. There's going to be some complaints, but not nearly the level that you're going to get with outreach email. And then you have a separate domain for cold email where, okay, this is the only thing that we're doing where these are domains for cold email and cold email only. And then you can connect them.
Wow, right. Those three. Fascinating. Fascinating. So do you think it's... I'm always very skeptical when people say outreach is dead, completely over, because, you know, the more companies you look at, how much of their revenue, you know, it's usually like half, pretty much all B2B companies rely on going out there, connecting with another company, seeing what they can do together. So it seems like there's some fear is very exaggerated that, you know, oh, this update is going to completely kill outreach because people have become so dependent on email. What do you think? Do you think cold email is completely dead now?
I think lazy cold email is completely dead now.
Okay.
Put some time into it, strategically use it, do some research, and you'll be perfectly fine. I know people that are getting, and we get open rates between 75 and 80% for the campaign. With click-through rates, usually around 10 to 15%. But we know people, and we're learning from them, where they're getting click-through rates, reply rates, mostly reply rates in the 20, 30, 40, even 50% range. And that's where you need to be. Everybody needs to aspire to send an email that is so relevant that half of the people that get it will reply back to you positively. Not like, why are you sending me this email? But let's have a conversation about this.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That is a pretty high bar. Interesting. What if I have a newsletter, if I have a few thousand people of opt-in customers? Well, one interesting thing is I've noticed a lot of people with newsletters who say they have double opt-in lists, when you actually look at the list, they're not even double opt-in, or they're just, you know, my LinkedIn connections, whose emails I scraped and I put in my newsletter, and they never actually signed up.
Not a good idea. Yeah,
that seems pretty common.
Yes.
But say they are actually opt-in, and I'm a newsletter owner. How concerned should I be?
Well, A, you should be doing double opt-in. I know that the opt-in rate is much lower, but you want people on your list that actually want to hear from you.
Right.
So you need to do whatever you can to get them to confirm their subscription. Otherwise, people will subscribe to things all the time and forget literally within a minute after they subscribed that they subscribed to it. Because they'll subscribe unless your delivery rate is within seconds, nanoseconds, the email shows up there. Postmark is one of the best for the speed in which the email is delivered. They'll check their email account. They'll not see it. If it takes 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, no matter what that thing that they really thought they wanted was, they've completely forgotten about it. So they see it in their inbox maybe 2-3 hours later. They go, what is this thing? I didn't ask for this. Of course you did. That's exactly, this is the lead magnet that you wanted so bad. But right. 2 hours later, they don't care. Like, what is it? This is junk, right. Spam, unsubscribe. Right. Who are these people?
Right. So just
I have,
more
unfortunately,
segmenting.
A hard stop
okay.
At the bottom yeah. of the hour. Can we have okay. a part one and part two?
Yeah, absolutely. Was there anything you wish I had asked you before we stop?
No, although I want to dig into what's happening, this new policy with Gmail a little bit more deeply.
Okay.
And then there are some things that we can talk about maybe in the next time that we have a conversation here about what we're seeing going on with Google as far mm-hmm. as them getting into the blacklisting business.
Yes.
And also... what people are needing to do when they're looking at their list, and these are opt-in lists for people that are actually opening the emails but are not engaging with them, and not, meaning they're not replying, they're not clicking. Those people have the highest rate of marking emails as spam, which is crazy. We think that they're okay because they're opening our emails, but those people, if they are not actually engaging with your email, you need to move them to a suppression list or a reactivation list where you can actually get them into a conversation with you. But that's something that we can talk about on our okay. next episode.
Amazing. Great cliffhanger. Thank you so much for your time. You're very intelligent. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. All right.
All right.